I always love learning from the brightest business minds around. So I'm excited to have today entertainment executive, entrepreneur, brand builder, Lee Trink. Lee, welcome, my friend.
Hey Ben, thanks for having me. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, it's I love the view right now. You're like sitting outside of a nice little like beautiful background there. So I feel like you're in a good spot for this. Well, with all the tough questions
A
coming.
serene setting, so.
There you go. Well, I was doing our research. Always first go to is social media, and on your Instagram bio, it says world traveler, strong opinion haver, and optimist. I'll ignore the world traveler for now, but where does the mindset of having a strong opinion and being an optimist, where does that come from?
Look, I think I've always had strong opinions. I'm passionate about ideas and and maybe I should say either I'm not involved or I'm extremely passionate. That's really it. There's almost no in between for me, and I like lively debate. Maybe that's the ex-prosecutor in me. But I like lively debate. I like I'm impassioned about a lot of things, and I think and I'm vocal, and I like the act of having a strong opinion, and what that means and what that brings to certainly a lot of businesses and just daily life.
Yeah, I mean, I think I saw somewhere, mental toughness is, greater than physical strength, right? And like you graduate from law school and you want another challenge, so you decide to spend 3 months completing basic training in the Israeli army. So how was that experience?
Well, it really resulted in what you just said. Like it what I wanted or what I expected was a real physical challenge, which I certainly got. I'd spent 3 years in law school and just ended a long blazing run of just education, and I thought, okay, let me go do something, physically challenging. But really, the takeaway for me was it was much more about mental toughness than about physical toughness. And I think. Look, I think that there's a connection. And I think you and I probably share the same mindset of like there's a mind body connection. And I think I even in business, I treat myself as an athlete. I used to say that to my assistants when in terms of like keeping me on schedule, keeping me, getting me on track with all that. But it really is about mental toughness, which, is something that it facilitates every aspect of your life, and certainly every aspect of business.
Yeah, that's funny. I've been thinking about it a lot more with my young boys I have at home, and how do you like slowly instill that? And so it's interesting. And as a father, like I was looking at it and saw that your dad moved to the States with $100 to his name. And what did that mean to you in your family growing up in Queens?
So, I mean, it's really more of I didn't know any better, right? You grow up wherever you grow up. That's the only reality that you know. And but I think as I got older and I realized also like what kind of character you must have in order to do something so challenging without a safety net, and I think created kind of the foundation of even risk taking for myself, right? Like there's a tremendous risk in doing that, and going to a country where you don't speak the language without really prospects, and so I think that set the foundation for how I approach life. I think it gave me a tremendous amount of belief in what I could do, and frankly also really for me demonstrated what the American dream is. Like I think his story and my story as a first generation American, like I've lived the American dream, like coming from Queens and doing all of the very different lives that I've led in my career. To me that's an American dream story, and those things are really I recognize them in other people, and I think it's what's so important about kind of what this country and the opportunity provides for people.
Yeah, it's I was listening to an interview once with, or recently with this guy who said he had battled cancer his whole childhood, and he was super successful. And he was there, everybody's like, where did that come from? There, he's like, I already know what it's to be at the bottom. Like, I've already, like, I've been there. And, like, it, I face it, it doesn't scare me. It's almost like right for you, like your dad, even, like, you saw what, you know, the it could be, and you know what, you can start again. So I'm sure that was an amazing lesson for you. So the
Yeah, for sure. And yeah, and humble beginnings, I think, is teaches you a lot of things. And I've said it through different points of my career, was like, you know, and even though he kind of built a great business and you know, and really you know, moved up the ladder for himself and our family, but you know, when I was at the DA's office, like, I was broke. Like, I considered myself broke, and I you
Yeah.
know, I was making you know, my starting salary was 28 and a half grand a year. And that was with law school loans. And so, you know, that part of it, like, I would say it routinely, like, I was great when I was broke. Like, I had a
Yeah.
great, I don't know how I don't know
Yeah.
how I did it, but things were great. And, you
Right.
know, I think that's a good perspective to have too.
By the way, I think my salary, my first year working at the Patriots out of college, was like 18. So I might, or
Oh,
it was either 18 or 21. So, yeah.
Wow.
But I found an interview from 2014 at
Yeah.
the Canadian Music Week. And they said, describing you, Lee was a child actor, got a PhD, trained with the Israeli army, and worked as a prosecutor in the Brooklyn DA's office. All this made him prepared for warfare when it came to the record business. So talk to me about your time in the record business.
That's funny. That's funny, and I guess accurate. You know, listen, record business and music business in general, super sharp elbowed business.
Yeah.
You know, it's a business where people are either they're scrappy, they're hustlers. You kind of live off your wits. It's not a place where, you know, if you have strong education or not, doesn't necessarily define your ability to succeed. I mean, I'm a proponent of education, but there are a lot of people who are just kind of, you know, it's a real entrepreneurial mindset within that business. And you know, the joke that I made when I left the DA's office, as I said, well, you know, I just went to work in an industry with a different group of criminals, which, you know, I don't quite mean, although, you know, the
Yeah.
music business was sort of started by, you know, with kind of gangsters. It was really, if you
Yeah.
read the old books about kind of the beginning of that business, it was kind of a gangster business. And I think that that's part of the DNA. And it's just super sharp elbows, very competitive. I mean, look, you know, from the sports side of how unbelievably competitive it is. I
Yeah.
think the difference in like the nature of it is, on the sports side, there tends to be kind of real infrastructure associated with, because it's the only way you can really stand up a team and go do things. In the music business, you can be a one man army or one woman army,
Right.
and you, with an artist, can literally conquer the world. And you know, and it you often find yourself when you're in that position, and because there's that dynamic. I know, and this was more when I became a manager, right? Like, you know, being at a record label, you're part of a big organization, a big group. You know, my last gig there was as president of Capitol Records, where you kind of call the play, but you've got an army of people behind you to really do the work.
Yeah.
Then I made the transition to a manager, which is really the inverse. You are truly an army of one or a few. And you know, the warfare part is, you know, I kind of would remember, like, anytime I would be speaking to a label or a company or whatever kind of deal, it'd be me on the phone and there'd be six people on the other phone, or six people in the room, or 12 people in the room.
Right.
And you know, you find yourself in a lot of kind of David and Goliath environments, which is, I mean, I'm kind of exhilarated by that.
Yeah.
But that's, you know, that's warfare. It's a different kind of warfare.
Yeah. You know, keep going there. You know, you were credited with launching the careers of like some huge names such as Katy Perry, Jared Leto's 30 Seconds to Mars, and you kind of architect some of the largest global marketing campaigns for the Rolling Stones, Coldplay, Lenny Kravitz, many others. So was there a I made it moment? Like, were you like, do you remember, like, were you at a concert? Were you in like a boardroom? Was it something where you're like, damn, like, I made it?
Yeah, I would say it's I would say there was a moment where I had the first thought of, holy shit, I was really part of creating something that was bigger than anything I could ever imagine. And it was New Year's Eve, might have been New Year's Eve of like 99 or maybe 2000. And, you know, the first artist that I ever broke at a record label was Kid Rock. And, you know, Kid Rock, much like many of the other artists that I broke, was really kind of undervalued by not only the industry, but even my own label didn't really get, quote unquote, get it. And I was at this New Year's Eve concert in his hometown, at a jam packed arena. And I just sat around, and there was a moment where everybody was like, you know, I can't remember if it was the lighters back then or the phones.
Yeah.
This moment, and everybody was singing a song, and I was just floored. I was just floored that I helped breathe life into this thing and bring it to so many people. And frankly, it became a bit of an addiction for me. Like my greatest addiction during that era was breaking artists. Like once I had the taste of that, of how you can take something and be part of something that nobody knows about or very few people know about. And based on your conviction of how you feel that, you know, about that, and then your willingness to kind of push that rock up the hill and go make something popular and help build that brand and help kind of preach help kind of convert people. I think it's an addiction I've never lost.
Yeah.
I think it started to evolve into different things. And, you know, even in my last venture, and even I think entrepreneurship is that. It's like you just have a fire in your belly, and you based on your conviction, you want to drive, you want to succeed in that. And I think that was really the moment where that was the aha moment for me.
I think my high school football team, at least in the weight room or on the bus, kept you in business with listen to Kid Rock, Devil Without a Cause, and Cocky. I mean, like, those two CDs or whatever it was back then, tapes, were just like repeat. Good. So
those are great locker room pregame. There's some good pregame music in there.
All the time. So you recently were the co-founder and CEO of FaZe. So like FaZe Clan, talk to me about those early days and a little bit about that business. It must have been a wild ride.
Oh man, it was, you know, look, I looked at it, and even, you know, like, it grew to something so big, but certainly in the beginning, I looked at it almost in the same way as I looked at an artist, right? I got connected to FaZe Clan. I actually signed them to my management company when it was really kind of well known in the gaming community. Very well known and in the gaming community, had a real audience in the gaming community, but completely unknown outside of that. And especially when I look back, it feels like a version of A&R, right? Like it was like, here is this thing. It is meaningful. People care about it, right? Like I could say the same thing about some of the artists. So I could say the same thing about Kid Rock or 30 Seconds to Mars or Katy Perry.
Right.
People cared, but not enough people knew. And, you know, so it felt like I knew a secret, and it wasn't much of a business back then. Like it really wasn't a business. It was, you know, making revenue. And, you know, I was fortunate enough to be participate in those in the kind of early days. This was like almost 8 years ago. And what I saw being up close to it really motivated me to say, you know what, I'm making the leap and I'm going to bet fully on this, because I think this actually can be, you know, as big as any brand that I've ever been part of before and that I've seen. And so I kind of closed my management company, you know, jumped in with both feet into Phase, and look, it was really an incredible journey. And it was, you know, look, there's a lot of kind of, you know, talk about warfare. There was a lot of warfare that we went through. Yeah. In the early days, frankly, still through to recent days, right? Like, yeah. You know, and you know, partially, I think, you know, when there's something that's so compelling, a brand that's so compelling, it you know, sometimes makes people, you know, like it creates this frenetic environment that we always had. It was, I think, a part of the brand, even you know, the you know, it was a controversial brand kind of almost always. Right. And I think that was part of the appeal, but
much like Kid Rock.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Super yeah. controversial then, different type of controversial now. It evolved but I think some brands are just that, you know, yeah. and some brands
you gotta own it. Some you just gotta own it.
That's right. And yeah. I think that's, sometimes your fans are connected to that aspect of it. Yeah. And so, you know, it was, you know, the last, you know, nearly 8 years of it has been incredible, incredible experience. You know, we've experienced kind of the highest highs and the lowest lows, like a lot of brands do and a lot of companies do. Yeah. So incredible story. You know, one day I'll, you know, I think about this is a story that needs to be a movie or a series or something, because yeah. it's that, it is, the truth is stranger than fiction in so yeah. many different ways, in ways that people are aware of and in ways that people are not aware of.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I know you recently moved on from there, and one of my favorite part of Playingfield is the community here and the aspect of that. And so, tell us how this community here at Playingfield can support what you're up to in your continued journey.
Yeah, well, look, I, you know, I think the takeaway from my experience in there is, you know, with FaZe Clan over the last number of years is, you know, I've been tapped into a world that really is misunderstood by most people, and certainly most, you know, most executives or entrepreneurs. You know, there's been a lot of money that's been deployed in the space. You know, some of that's gone in the right places, some of it's gone in the wrong places. But, you know, both gaming and the creator economy, I think, are just getting started. I think these are still very nascent businesses. Undoubtedly, I'm going to continue, you know, within this space, you know, likely, you know, launch a company, you know, or a portfolio that capitalizes on my expertise, understanding, and connectivity to it. And I think it you know, especially for, you know, for your audience, the interesting thing about both kind of creator, you know, creators and gaming is it's now interconnected to really the rest of, you know, what I sometimes refer to it as almost like the cultural roundtable of, like, what drives culture, what drives entertainment. And, you know, that's certainly sports, it's music, it's TV and film, I think it's even fashion. And I think all of these things are more interconnected than they've ever been. You know, I think that social media has, you know, created the backdrop for that. And so, you know, what I'm focused on is how to really look at that opportunity, how to look at the trajectory of the traditional verticals within that table, and these new verticals of, you know, creator and gaming, and what is the opportunity to create a bridge, right? Because still, when I look at, again, when I look at all those verticals, you've got the mature in, you have the mature businesses and the mature industries of things like sports and music and film. And then you have these like very nascent, you know, the creator side and the gaming side, which are nascent, the models are still being developed. And so the money, really all of the money is still in that first bucket, but the audience is migrating and has been migrating to that second bucket. And so to me, it's about, I've always looked at my role as creating a bridge between the two worlds, right? Mm-hmm. When I was at the mantle, at the helm of FaZe Clan, to me, that was it. Most of the money is over there. That, you know, most people still don't quite understand what this newfangled thing is. I mean, it's not so new, but it's still nascent. And so building the bridge to me is really important. And you know, to me, the future and my future moves will be about, you know, creating that bridge or creating more synergy between, you know, all of those verticals that sit around that cultural table.
Right. And talking about money and all that, I'll, for a final question here, are you buying or selling crypto?
I'm holding right now. I'm holding right. And partially, frankly, is because I want dry powder for my other ventures. Right.
You
have me at a time of change where, you know, having dry powder is my friend. So at the moment I'm holding.
All right. Noted. Well, Lee, I really appreciate your time today and coming on. We will put links to your social media so people can reach out to you directly or come through Plainfield, but I'm sure it'll be fun to support and like getting my popcorn out to see stand by for what's next. So congrats, man. Thank you.
Thank you, man. Appreciate it.